Weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Roz, Emma and Graeme for driving us through the afternoon. It is Friday, February 7th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the National Chart Show at 7pm here on 2FM, Alan Colley is with us ahead of the President's Cup tonight and we'll look ahead at the weekend's FA Cup action. Jane Mangan chats racing. Shane McGrath sets us up for round 3 of the National Hurling League. Orla Keeling has the latest on the Ireland Women's Basketball Euro qualifiers. And Brian O'Leary reacts to the big NFL news with a date in Dublin confirmed. Plus, we'll hear from Ireland interim head coach Simon Easterby with team news ahead of Sunday's Six Nations test in Scotland. If you want to have your say on any of the above or anything else besides, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200 or join the conversation on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Good evening, listeners. Happy Friday, one and all. Alan Colley, happy President's Cup Day to
you. Yes, Shane, we're back. We're back, baby.
We are back.
Yeah, it is. It's well, we're a week out from the start of the league, which is obviously fantastic, but the President's Cup has become...
glorified, friendly or meaningful silverware.
Well, according to Mikel Arteta, the comparison over there is obviously the Charity Shield. And he thinks, he was questioned yesterday in a press conference, and when one of the journalists put it to him that, like, in your 5 years here, you've only won one trophy, is that good enough? He jumped straight in and said three. And the journalist was still looking at him. He says, three? Yeah, two Charity Shields. So you can't be counting them. But in terms of your question, Shane, around the fact, is it a meaningless friendly? No, I think it does matter. Yeah, I think it does. It starts the season off lovely, especially for Shelburne. Huge expectation on this year after what they achieved last year. So I do think it matters, and I think both teams will approach it like it matters. And I also think the supporters in the crowd are obviously that there's huge amount of tickets sold as well, considering it is the President's Cup. Yeah. So I think it's become more than a glorified friendly now. I do think it matters. It's become a staple on the calendar. It's the curtain raiser to the league starting, and I'm very much looking forward to it, Shane. I'll be in attendance.
Will you be in attendance in the stand or in the dugout, Alan?
Don't tell Damien Duff. Why do you think I have this big green anorak here?
I didn't know it was an Arsene Wenger tribute or a Liam Gallagher. I'm still trying to work that one out.
I've actually hidden the draw and a badge on it, Shane, so I have. But no, I'd be very much in attendance. I'm not part of the staff tonight. That's only for the big cup final days.
Well, so it is a glorified friendly. Listen, Alan, it is great that we are a week away from the league. President's Cup this evening, Shells Drogheda. John Kenny is actually at Talca Park. We'll cross to him live a little bit later on. But we have a packed show. We will come back to Association Football a little bit later. But some news starting with rugby, because it is Six Nations weekend once again. Peter O'Mahony and Robbie Henshaw return to the Ireland side for their Six Nations clash against Scotland at Murrayfield on Sunday. Munsterman O'Mahony replaces Ryan Baird in the back row. Baird drops to the bench with Ian Henderson missing out, while Henshaw is in for Gary Ringrose in what is otherwise an unchanged 15 following the opening weekend victory against England in Dublin. Ireland interim head coach Simon Easterby was speaking to our own Michael Corcoran at the team announcement this morning.
It probably wasn't always our intention to change, but certainly in the centre combinations at the moment, we have three world-class players that are competing for two positions. And also we know how important it is that the guy came off the bench can add impact. And I thought Ringer did really well starting against England. We just feel like for this week, the combination will be Bundy and Robbie. And we know they have a very good relationship on and off the pitch. But, you know, Gary will also be covering centre and wing, and you know that from that respect, it's often a big ask to play 60 minutes in the centre the way Gary plays, and then has to move to the wing. He'll do it, obviously, but just feel like this week it's the right combination, and we know that Gary will come on and add loads when he gets the opportunity. The other change with Beto dropping to the bench and Pete coming in. Obviously, Pete came into camp with a little bit less rugby under his belt, and we felt like he needed a good week of conditioning, so we didn't select him for the England 23. But I feel like he'll add a load of experience and quality to that back row. Certainly to the line out, I thought Beto did a brilliant job last week against England. But Pete is a very smart and experienced operator in that area, and he adds that little bit of edge and experience that we'll need up front against Scotland this weekend.
Scotland make three changes to their team. Tom Jordan is in at 12, Rory Sutherland at loosehead prop, and Jack Dempsey at 8, while Sam Skinner included on a 6-2 split bench. You can hear live commentary of Scotland versus Ireland in the company of Michael Corcoran and James Downey on Radio 1's Sunday Sport. Some very sad news overnight. Former Dublin goalkeeper and manager Paddy Cullen has died at the age of 80 after a long illness. One of the best known figures in the game, the O'Connell boys clubman enjoyed 13 years between the sticks for the boys in blue. After making his debut in 1966, he won 3 All-Ireland titles and 4 All-Star awards as part of the swashbuckling Heffo's army that rejuvenated the game in the capital. As journalist Roy Curtis said on Twitter, Paddy Cullen was the loveliest of men. His laugh, a cathedral bell peal infusing the air with giddy delight. He dived to deflect Liam Salmon's penalty in 74, altering both the trajectory of a ball and the course of GAA history. One of Heffo's listed buildings, a giant, a hero. So sincere condolences to all of Paddy's family, friends and teammates. He survived by his wife Anne and children Liz, Anthony and Andrew. In cricket, Ireland leads Zimbabwe by 76 runs with 9 second innings wickets remaining after the second day of the play in their one-off test in Bulawayo. After being bowled out for 260 in the first innings, Ireland limited the host to just a 7-run advantage before reaching 83 for 1 at the close of play. However, the big, big news today is that the NFL will host its first regular season game in Dublin later this year. It will be one of the largest international sporting events to ever take place in Ireland and will be held in Croke Park in the autumn with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the designated home team. Brian O'Leary, co-host and co-founder of the Irish NFL show, joins us live from New Orleans, or New Orleans, I should say. Jeff Shepherd will be straight on to me for my mispronunciation to react to this huge, huge news, Brian.
Hi guys, yeah, it's fantastic news. Long overdue, bearing in mind the amount of games, I guess, the UK and various other cities across Europe have had. But it's finally come to pass. And yeah, we're going to see the Steelers host a home game come maybe late September, early October of the next season. It's great news.
So the Steelers hosting a home game. Opposition to be confirmed. There is speculation it might be the Packers.
Yeah, that seems to be the kind of the storyline that's been going around over the course of the last few days over here in New Orleans. If it doesn't come as a surprise, I imagine the NFL will look at who the most appropriate team to bring over. They have a huge fan base in their own right across the country, so it would make for a fantastic game. Two of the, I suppose, the kind of foundation teams in the NFL for such a long time, legacy, and look, they've got both teams have a fantastic fan base across the country. It will be interesting to see who they select. It's not a foregone conclusion, but it seems to be trending in that direction.
Okay. A return for American football, the Croke Park, the Steelers playing here in 97, but the first regular season game. The Steelers, of course, with a strong Irish link, Brian.
Yeah, the Rooney family has got great connections with Ireland, in particular, Newry, up the north of Ireland. And we were at the press conference 2 years ago in Croke Park when they first kind of explored the opportunity to enter the Irish market. And they made their intentions very clear that day that ultimately they want to have a game here and they want to grow as their links with Ireland. And so the Rooney family, it was significant for them. It was something that the family have always been very keen to get, I suppose, acknowledge and recognise their love and desire to be back in Ireland. So we were at the press conference this morning and Dan Rooney was very clear this was something that was as much a passion project for the family and the love of Ireland. But so they're very committed, and there was conversations around what their long-term aspirations are for both the south and the north of Ireland. So this isn't going away in terms of, this is the first step for them on a bigger journey within the country. So yeah, it's fantastic news. They're doing all these various different events, flag football across the country and stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's not going anywhere. It's only going in one direction, and it's fantastic.
So fair to say this isn't going to be a once-off match?
No, that was actually a question I quizzed this morning. I asked them, was this is heavily focused right now on the Steelers, and it's great that the Steelers are keen to, I suppose, give up a home game in the States and play it in Dublin. I asked Peter O'Reilly, who's heavily involved in terms of the international growth of the game, is this an aspiration in terms of the longevity of games in Ireland? Are we going to see other teams come over? And they said there is a desire. Every team in the league is kind of contracted now to be playing a game internationally by 2028. So they've explored other teams for further games, but it was very much a wait and see. Let's get the first hurdle over the line in terms of next season and this game. I don't think we have to be concerned about this game in terms of the excitement and the buzz. And I can't imagine what the the madness and craziness which will come when the tickets go on sale. I think it'll be one of the quickest things to sell out, probably as sort of an Oasis concert in the past couple of years in Ireland. So
hopefully there's no talk of dynamic pricing, but I think that's a conversation for another day. You mentioned international matches by 2020. I wasn't actually aware of that. So Croke Park joins the likes of Wembley, the Bernabeu in Madrid, the Olympiastadion in Berlin. So there is a genuine global push from the NFL to spread the game.
Yeah, we've had, I suppose, they've been locked into London for quite some time, and then they explored other avenues over the course of the last few years. There was the opening game in Germany, which took place in Munich. They then went to Frankfurt for two games, returned to Munich this season. You touched on it there. There's a game next season in the Bernabeu, which the Miami Dolphins will host, and Berlin has been allocated the game, and the Indianapolis Colts will be the host team. The announcement on Wednesday afternoon over here was that they're going to play a game in Melbourne, which is the 2026 season, and the LA Rams are going to host the team. So we're now in a situation where they've got the main frame in Europe. Ireland's is on the table now. They're going to Australia. Like, it clearly is such a global sport, and I think this doesn't come as a surprise to NFL fans back home, people who are heavily invested in the game such as ourselves. Like, we've seen this coming for quite some time, and it kind of does catch people's eye now, but this is like something that's been in the offing for quite some time, and it's only going one way. There's other countries again being put on the list as well. They're exploring other avenues in different countries, so I think there's more to be announced, and, you know, not necessarily now or in this off season, but maybe next year they might have further confirmations of games in different countries.
Yeah, just like personally speaking for yourself and the guys in the Irish NFL show and fans that might be listening to our show here now that have followed American football for so long, this must be really, like, genuinely meaningful and special news to see a regular season game come to Ireland.
Yeah, I've been watching the game since late 80s, and like, it's night and day compared to where we were back then. We had the limited coverage of Channel 4, and Sky Sports brought it to another level in terms of the level of content. And today, you know, everything you want is easily accessible. But for people, again, like, who have been heavily invested for so long and have been, I suppose we've been doing the Irish NFL show for close to 5 years now. So again, we've seen it kind of the transition quickly come along. But it's rewarding for fans, because for a long time, if you wanted to see an NFL game live, essentially you had to go to the States, and like, that can be quite cost prohibitive for people to do that. And yeah, it's a wonderful experience to go to an NFL game. We're very fortunate. This will be the fourth Super Bowl on Sunday in which I've been to, and it's very hard to explain even the enormity of the week in question and what it's about. Like, you've got the whole week Radio Row, the opportunity to be on the field on Monday night quizzing the players. The NFL do a fantastic job in terms of the level of content and the access they give you. It's very rewarding. But back to your point, yeah, a lot of fans at home we've come a long way in such a quick time frame in terms of, initially it was one game in London, and now here we are in a situation where it's three games in London, a game in Spain, a game in Germany, and then obviously the great news today that there's going to be a game in Dublin.
It is. It's great to see passionate fans like yourself seeing the rise of the sport, even the gentleman sitting across from me here, Alan Colley, in kind of similar trends with the League of Ireland at the moment. But listen, Brian, if we end our conversation, you're obviously over in New Orleans, and this announcement was made this afternoon ahead of the small matter of Sunday's Super Bowl. Have you been gripped by Super Bowl fever?
Oh, yeah. I'm always gripped by Super Bowl fever when I come over here. What I find, there's an eye-opener every year for me when you go to different cities across states. The culture is very different. But the enormity, you never get away from the enormity. Like, Radio Row, I can only compare it to Cheltenham, Cheltenham week. You're walking essentially a convention centre which is stacked with thousands of different podcasts and different media outlets, everybody vying for people's attention to interview. It's a great experience. And then obviously that's even before you get to the situation of the game on Sunday. And it's probably the most interesting, significant Super Bowl we've had for quite some time, because we've never had a team in the NFL actually win three Super Bowls in a row. We never even had a team that's been in a position to win three in a row. So for the Kansas City Chiefs to be here on Sunday going against an Eagles team that they played only 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, so it's a repeat from 2 years ago, which was a very close game in which the Chiefs came out the right side of 38-35, and it kind of has that feel about this one on Sunday. Early on in the week, there was very much a feel that the Chiefs would be the team that would win, but as the week has moved on, a lot of people are feeling that this is the Eagles' time, and they will be the ones to stop the Chiefs from creating record. But if they are to break the record on Sunday, it'll be a huge moment and a significant moment in the history of the NFL.
Okay, final one for you, Brian. Call it for me. Which way do you feel this is going to play out?
I think the Chiefs will win. The Chiefs just have this way of getting over the line. It kind of feels like that period in which the Patriots were quite dominant. You'd always have a scenario, a narrative as to why the other team will find a way to win. They might even have the better players within their roster, but ultimately the best team, not necessarily the best team, but a team that's savvy enough to understand the nature of how to win a Super Bowl. This is Andy Reid's, the head coach of the Chiefs. He's to win on Sunday will be his fourth Super Bowl victory. I just think they'll get it over the line. I think the Eagles will give them a real tough test, but ultimately I think Patrick Mahomes comes out on top and they win, and Patrick Mahomes will yet again win MVP.
Okay, we shall see Sunday evening, Chiefs against the Eagles. For now, Brian O'Leary, co-host and co-founder of the Irish NFL Show. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, Jane Mangan joins us on the line to chat racing. And on yesterday's show, we mentioned that racing at Thurles was abandoned due to a severe injury to jockey Michael O'Sullivan. Now, there is an update today. Michael O'Sullivan is in intensive care at Cork University Hospital following a fall at Thurles yesterday. Racing was abandoned at the County Tipperary racetrack as a result of the final fence fall for O'Sullivan, who was riding Wee Charlie and was one of three fallers in the two-mile chase. O'Sullivan received treatment on the course before being transferred by air ambulance to the Cork facility. A statement released this morning by the IHRB stated, Michael is in intensive care unit at Cork University Hospital, being treated for injuries sustained at Thurles yesterday, and is receiving the best medical care. Michael's family wish to express their gratitude for all of the well wishes. And Jane, probably an unfortunate place to start our conversation, but I'm sure you echo those sentiments of well wishes.
Absolutely, and you couldn't start anywhere other than acknowledging what happened to Michael yesterday and passing on all of the information to the public, because the outpouring of concern and of thoughts has been profound, even outside of the industry, outside of the sport. And I'm sure his family are much appreciative of that, but also we respect boundaries. We respect their request for privacy and space at this time, which I can only imagine is extremely tough. But I'm sure in Cork he's getting the best of care, and hopefully we will have positive news. But at the moment, yes, our thoughts are with Michael and all of the O'Sullivan family.
Yeah, very difficult time at the moment, and hopefully it is good news for jockey Michael Sullivan. That is the latest that we have, as I mentioned, from the IHRB statement as we know it. Looking forward to racing action this weekend. Jane, domestically, there are two Grade 2 races at Navan on Sunday.
There's good racing at home and in the UK. Navan on Sunday, you mentioned the two Grade 2s. The main race is probably being the Boyne Hurdle. Seven runners declared to run. Manila Indo is probably using this as a springboard to going back to Aintree to the Grand National, which he was second in last year. Far and Glory reversed back from chasing to hurdling here, as does Riviere de Tell. But I like Noel Meads, the Devil's coachman, who hasn't actually won a race since he won this race in 2022. But he ran a really good race in the Galmoy Hurdle on Thaisa's Day down in Gorham Park when he was second to Rocky's Diamond. And I think the Devil's coachman could give local trainer Noel Mead a Grade 2 winner on Sunday. And the other Grade 2 race on the card is a five-runner best odds guaranteed chase over 3 miles. Better Days Ahead was a late non-runner at the Dublin Racing Festival due to quick ground. Well, he's not going to get quick ground at Navan on Sunday. This horse was second over 3 miles to Croke Park at Leopardstown over Christmas. He was a strong stayer that day. Of course, he won at the Cheltenham Festival when he won the Martin Pipe Handicap Hurdle last March. But I think Better Days Ahead will live up to his name and give Gordon Elliott a fourth win in 6 years in the Novice Chase at Nab.
Okay, the Novice Chase goes to post at 4:15, and then a little bit earlier, 22:03 on Sunday, is the Boyne Hurdle. Notable action at Newbury tomorrow, Jane. However, unfortunate news, no Sergino on show.
No, he has sustained a small cut to a hind leg, which has ruled him out of his intended engagement in the Game Spirit, which was going to be a really interesting race because he's obviously a novice, having only his second start over fences in against open company horses. But fortunately, we still have quite a good field, albeit only five runners. Matata for JJ Slevin is the current favourite. Edward Stone, a previous Grade 1 winner in open company, now 11 years of age, is the second favourite. Liberty Hunter, Master Chew, and JPR1 make up the quintet. But it was going to be very interesting to see the horse that trounced Ballyburn over the minimum trip at Kempton on his chase debut, to see what he could do against horses in open company. Also on the Newbury card is the Denman Chase. Brave Man's Game is in there as favourite for the first time tongue strap, but Brave Man's Game isn't getting any younger, is he? Jello, Hitman, Le Patron, Galaw and Sam Brown. That's an interesting field for that grade two chase. And probably for the punters, the most interesting race on that card will be the William Hill Hurdle. It's a premier handicap, formerly known as the Schweppes or the Betfair. It's now known as the William Hill. It's looking like Nico de Bonneville and Nicky Henderson are going to team up with the favourite here in Joyeuse. But Secret Squirrel, Washington, a horse that Harry Darren brought over to Fairy House in December. He beat a horse called Enniskerry in Fairy House. Enniskerry has franked that form considerably since then. There's a field of 18 going to post. That's why I think the punters might be looking for a bit of value in that race, because it's ultra competitive.
Okay, and if we end our conversation a bit closer to home tomorrow, you're off to Naas?
I am indeed. I'm driving up the road to see a 7-race card. The Hunter's Chase at the back of it is usually an interesting race. It was won by It's on the Line last year, and It's on the Line is back for more under Derek O'Connor. The race before that is the Opera Hat, the listed mare's chase, won last year by Allegory de Vassy, and this time around Allegory de Vassy will be going for back-to-back wins. But I'm not siding with her. I think Dino Blue will have her measure. I think despite giving away £6, I would think this minimum trip is more up her street for Dino Blue. Interestingly and unusually, the bumper is on the middle of the card, and I would never really mention a bumper on our coverage on Game On, Shane, but the first foal out of the 11-time Grade 1 winner, Apples Jade, a filly called Apples Jane, makes her debut at 3:40 tomorrow. So for anybody who's a fan of the great mare, Apples Jade, her first progeny hits the track tomorrow.
One to watch. We lead the conversation there. Jane Mangan, great chatting as always. Enjoy Naas tomorrow and have a great weekend.
Game On.
Racing.
RTE.
2FM.
Game On.
Hurling.
Now, Shane McGrath joins us to chat hurling. Just to mention, though, there are a couple of refixed football matches in the National Football League tomorrow, 2:30. Division 1, Kerry welcome Donegal. Division 3, Leash are on the road to Leitrim. And in Division 4, Wicklow play Waterford in those refixed matches. But we are here to chat hurling. Round 3 of the Alliance Leagues in the company of Shane McGrath. There are 2 fixtures tomorrow, 5:30, Wexford against Kilkenny, 7:30, Galway against Clare, and then on Sunday, Limerick against Tip in Division 1A. We will get to Division 1B very shortly, but let's start chronologically, I suppose, Shane, with that meeting of Wexford and Kilkenny. And I suppose from a neutral's perspective, perhaps it is fair to say Kilkenny's defeat to Galway last week was the perfect result, because they'll be all guns blazing now, looking for a response against Wexford, a Wexford side that just seem to be automatically step up their game when the black and amber jerseys is in front of them. This should be a cracker, Shane.
Yeah, it should be, Shane. Yeah, I don't know. I just
might be too optimistic. Too optimistic.
I just think like, I don't know. Like, do people realise actually how many bodies Wexford are down at the moment? You know, I think maybe the casual fan doesn't actually realise how many players they're missing. And I think Keith Rossiter, he was even interviewed last week there, I don't know if you heard it, and you know, someone said to him about relegation, and he said, look, if we do get relegated, so be it, like, but what he wants to see is a performance week on week. And like, to be fair, they got an improvement in performance against Tip from the Cork game. The Cork game, the first night out, Shane, the weather was brutal, everything that could go wrong went wrong. One of their top players in Roy O'Connor gets sent off. It was just a catastrophe of events for him, really. And Keith Rossiter, you said that. But the last day against Tip, played much better. They were using the ball better. You know, got up a much healthier looking scoreline in hitting 19 points. And you know, there was a goal between it for a lot of the time. Tip got a penalty. So I think what he wants more than anything, Shane, is just a little bit more improvement in performance. I think Lee Chin back in training now. But you know, getting him back, getting Roy O'Connor back, getting the likes of Conor McDonald back. These kind of guys who, you know, Wexford just don't have the strength and depth that maybe the likes of the Limericks and the Clares and the Corks have. And I think that's what he wants. He just wants a performance. I think what you said there, like, it's probably bad for Wexford maybe that Kilkenny lost that game. But I was down at that game last week, Shane. And like, normally when Kilkenny hit you for 1-6 and they go up, their responses or the result is they'll just drive on and kill off the game. But Galway show great character. We'll talk about him in a minute to get the next 4 scores in that game. But I just feel, looking at him, like, Like, Mossy Keown scored 7 points for play at last day. Like, no matter what game it is, like, that is some clipping. And, like, they don't want to become over-reliant on Mossy Keown, like, if he was injured or something. So I'm sure Derek Lynn is looking at, you know, when am I going to get Adrian Mullen back? When am I going to get John Donnelly back? And he's made a few changes the weekend. Interesting enough, I think Mikey Carey gone to six there. Killian Doyle is starting midfield for him. And Keane Kenny's gone into centre forward. So, you know, they have a few changes even from the Galway game. So, what way do I see it going, Shane? I still think Kilkenny will have too much for Wexford where they are now in the campaign. Like,
okay. Well, the team that defeated Kilkenny, Galway, they are sure to be full of confidence ahead of the All-Ireland champions coming to Salt Hill, who are well rested from a bye week last weekend. However, they're going to be missing a couple of bodies, I think.
Yeah, like, and even though they lost Kilkenny the first day, and it's like they only had four of the starting 15 from the All-Ireland final. So, like, and they were still 7-8 points to up in one stage in that game against Kilkenny. Like, so I think what Clare have now is, and what Brian Lowen is trying to get is that squad. Like, you know, like, I mean, you see David McInerney went off the last day, Conor Lean went off the last day as well. So that's your fullback, centre back, potentially maybe mightn't play this weekend due to injury. So, like, the likes of Jack O'Neill, David Conroy, Sean Rin, Patrick Crotty, these kind of guys, they want to put their hands up now and say, look, we want to be a part of this thing, like, you know. It's nice being involved, but I'm sure it gets to a stage in your career where you want to be playing, you want to be on the field to play. And I think it's an ideal scenario for Brian Lohan to be in. Like, as you said, they're well rested, so they'll be absolutely busting for this up in Galway as well. So that's what I feel Clare are developing now, Shane, is they're developing a very strong panel. Like, and like, if I mention, like, Tony Kelly mightn't feature, Shane O'Donnell definitely won't, John Conlon, maybe Peter Duggan, maybe David Fitz, as I said, David Mack, Adam Hogan injured, they still have a lot of big guns to come back. But look, it's a glass half full for Brian Lohan. He's looking at them to say, you know, who wants to be on this thing, who wants to make it. And from a Galway point of view, like, they were just so bad against Tip the first day. Like, there was 11 changes from that team that played Kilkenny from the first day against Tip. And we've seen a spine of a team now for Galway, Shane, that Fintan Burke at 3, Gavin Lee at 6, Tom Monaghan, Keenan Fahey at 8 and 9, maybe Tiernan Killeen at 11 and Conor Cooney at 14, right? You won't be a million miles away from that come championship for Galway. So maybe that's what Mahal O'Donoghue who's looking at now, saying, I'll get my spine right and I'll build around them, get Cathal Mannion back, get Dahi Burke in there somewhere, get Conor Whelan, where's the best place to put him. So I think that's what Mihal O'Donoghue is looking at now, saying, I'm going to build my spine. Yeah, I've tried out some guys, it didn't work, I'll give him another go, but I'm going to keep that spine solid. So if you were to ask me who's going to win the game, I because Galway are probably going to go strong again and probably have a lot of big guns on in comparison to where Clare are at right now, I think Galway will be winning this game.
Okay, both of those matches on Saturday. On Sunday, Limerick against Tip. Two wins from two for Tip. Something special brewing in your neck of the woods, Shane?
There's no one getting carried away anyway about it anyway, to be honest. Like, they've been asked two questions. Can they play against Galway up in Galway? And they did. And can they beat Wexford at home? And they did. And, like, they got, like, we've got six or seven guys to play for Tip in senior hurling for the first time ever over the last couple of games. So, like, I just think the first big test is coming now this weekend, Shane. Like, Galway, as I said, you've seen the amount of changes, 11 changes they made from that game to the Kilkenny game the last day, and you see what the result they got. And Wexford, as I said, they're just down to anybody. So I think the first big test is coming for them now this weekend. And I think what Liam Cahill wants, and I think what the Tip boys want, to be honest, Shane, is, like, we've got some fair trouncings in the Gaelic grounds now and in recent years. And I think you just want a performance there, Shane, right? And you want a good feeling coming out of the Gaelic grounds, because we're going back in there for Munster Championship in a matter of weeks now, nearly. Like, you know, first round of the Championship is Tip v Limerick in the Gaelic grounds. So I think that's what they really, really want. Just want the performance. If they win, they win, fine. But It'll be a mighty win for him. But I think it's a performance. I think Liam Cahill will go as strong as he possibly can. He's made no bones about that. Whoever's going well, they're going to be playing. And the Tip team you see playing against Limerick, I won't be a million miles off what you might see come Championship. And it'll be up to guys to keep their place. Talk about Limerick then. I thought it was a very physical battle, Shane, for him against Cork down in Cork. We've seen Garrod Hegarty came off with a hand injury. Will Donoghue came off, I'm not sure the extent of his injury, but holding his leg. And there were some big hits in it. And I think as a result of that, Limerick will be down maybe a few of the guys that they might have been hoping to play. But again, it's glass half full for John Kiely, no more so Brian Lowen, that he's creating a panel now, and they tried things out the last day and they worked. I thought Barry Murphy, cornerback, was good. I thought Jess Galan was really good in the goals. I thought Colin Coughlin was very good at wing back. I thought Aidan O'Connor, Paddy O'Donovan up in the forwards worked really well for him as well. So these are all guys who want to put their hand up, and I suppose people are going to know more and more about Adam English as the year goes on. Hurling people will know who he is, but I mean the casual fan, this guy is going to be talked about in the same vein as the Tony Kellys, as the Noel McGraths of this world in come a few years' time, because I just think he's that good. So I'd say he will start as well, and it'll be a good test for him as well. So how do I see it going? My head would say Limerick, just where they're at the moment in terms of development, but hoping for a really good performance from Tip Shane.
Your heart's always going to say Tip Shane, let's be honest about it.
Ah, sure, look, it is, of course it is, yeah. If we were playing the best team, the best of the best of the rest, we'd still try and say we'd have a chance. Like,
that is true. Come here, before I let you go, Shane, in 1B, we talk about Limerick being the test as to where Liam Callan and Tip are at. Similar sentiments for Davy Fitzgerald and Antrim against Offaly?
Yeah, it is, because I suppose they got a rude awakening the first day out against Dublin. I think Dublin are going really well. Again, they actually had 7 debutants that night as well, between 4 starting and a few guys coming off the bench. I think they have a panel of 43 at the moment, Dublin, so that's where they're at. And they're getting all the guys back now, you know, the Danny Sutcliffe's, you know, the Nafina boys, Paddy Boland, these kind of guys, like, you know. So, but like, so I think they would have learned a lot, but I do agree with you, Shane. I think that Offaly being up in Lee McCarthy this year as well, you know, this, they'll look at it and say, right, this is going to be the standard now and above that, and 1B is so competitive. We've seen what Carlow are doing. So I think it's a must win for Antrim. I know their next game is at home in Corrigan, will be against Waterford. So they'll want to get a performance and a victory out of this against Offaly. And Offaly the same. Offaly aren't flying it at the moment. You know, they're going really well. This is all without, I suppose, their marquee guy in Adam Screeny, who's injured at the moment. So, you know, as I said, Johnny Kelly and, you know, even Brendan Maher is involved and Shamie Callan is involved there as well. So they're in a really good place as well, and they're going to fancy this where they're at the moment. So it's a tough one to call. I think Offaly might just shade this one, Shane. But as I said, 1B is every bit as competitive, if not even more competitive than 1A this year.
Okay, and just the briefest of brief answers, Shane, you'd imagine Waterford are going to have a big response considering how round 2 went for them.
Has to, Shane. At home, it has to be a response. Guys are coming back. We know who they're missing. At home, against Laois, who are not in a good place at the moment, it seems. So you could not see anything but a really good performance from Waterford and a victory for them.
Okay, Waterford against Laois, 2 o'clock throw-in off the Antrim, 1:45, and Dublin away to Westmead. On paper, you'd imagine Dublin will have too much for Westmead. Famous last words now. As I say, Westmead will probably win, but that's a 2 o'clock throw-in. For now, Shane McGrath, thanks so much for taking the call. We are turning our attention to basketball. Orla Keeling is with us to chat Eurobasket qualifiers. Before we chat to Orla, we can hear from the Irish women's head coach, James Weldon.
Yeah, look, a very, very difficult night. I think, you know, we probably weren't at the level we needed to be ourselves. And I thought, you know, France were exceptional. You know, I think they showed by, they were within a point of the goal in the Paris Olympics. You know? So, yeah, just seemed to hit them on a really, really good night. And, you know, partially for us, things didn't kind of happen for us.
The quick turnaround now to Sunday's game versus Latvia. Any injury updates ahead of Sunday?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, I suppose it's going to be a test of our character, but, you know, thankfully that game's at home, and, you know, these players are proud players and proud staff around me, so, you know, we'll pick ourselves up and we'll get ready for Latvia on Sunday in the arena.
And in terms of the opportunity against Latvia, you've been targeting this game?
Yeah, look, I mean, Latvia don't have the kind of strength that France, you know, they're still, you know, 50 places ahead of us in our rankings or whatever, like, you know, but look, you know, there's a performance in our team, and, you know, I'm hoping that we can deliver that performance on Sunday.
James Weldon there speaking to Orla Keeling, who joins us now in studio. And that was James Weldon speaking, Orla, after a heavy defeat, 125 points to 24 away to France in Chalon-sur-Saône in their Group E Eurobasket qualifier. Sold out National Basketball Arena awaits the Irish women's team on Sunday against Latvia. On paper, when you look at that result and you think that is an almighty drubbing, however, if you expand the conversation and look at it from a broader context, it wasn't too long ago Ireland were playing in a much lower competition, it's fair to say.
Yeah, geez, when you talk about lower, it was stratospheres away from the Olympics. I was even educating Alan Colley there a bit on basketball. The reality of last night is we played the second best team in the world, who lost to the United States, the best team, by 1 point at the Olympics. We had three professionals on the team. They had eight players who won silver medal in Paris. So you talk about the story of Irish basketball. They weren't in competitions, you know, like this, like the Eurobasket since 2009. They re-entered it after winning the Small Nations silver medal. It was kind of a battle of silver medalists maybe, but, you know, we were facing the likes of Andorra, Gibraltar. So now you're facing those mighty nations that are basketball powerhouses. So for me, it's about the bigger picture, entering the Eurobasket, you know, since 2009. We've girls there that not only didn't, you know, get to play a generation that lost it and playing that level. Players that are on the team now didn't get to see the Irish senior women's team play in Ireland. So to be at that level now, to be there and push it forward. But even you look across the competition, they're going to change the format. We can speak about that. There's other games with big gaps, you know, the likes of Belgium, who ranked sixth in the world, beat Azerbaijan 97-24. So with the new format, there will be less landslide matchups like this across the qualifiers and give Ireland meaningful games and competition going forward.
Okay, I do want to pick your brain on Sunday's match in particular, but just on that new format. So these matches are going to become less familiar, I suppose.
Yeah, it's going to, what I was chatting to Kate Hickey last week about it, and we were talking about underage, and we're not that far off in underage. We're doing well. We're competing in the B championships. Even the women's team, who are a number of players on the senior team now, won a silver medal and got promoted to the A championships. But the reality is, she said, when you go to senior, you feel like there's a small gap there at underage. There's a drastic jump when we go to senior level. So these games, there's the fact that they're going to be streamed, so they're going to be more kind of matched up, but also there's a third game every window. So we're getting another meaningful game that is giving us that competition level, giving us that exposure to that level. And again, the more the girls come through and the more they get that exposure to that international level, they could even push on and go professional, which you have seen with three players now on the team.
Okay, we're going in the right trajectory, which is brilliant to see. Sunday, will it be a case of trying to park the scars of that defeat, and how big of an opportunity is this to respond with not only a performance, but perhaps a victory?
Yeah, well, I think last night was parked very much when they left the arena. I suppose Sunday is a big opportunity to get their first win in the competition. You know, they have players now that are back that weren't available for the last window, the likes of Claire Amelia, Adele Thornton, who add so much on the court but also off it. But you look at the players that, who were there, you know, I mentioned Kate, her sister Sarah, Lauren Holman, who not only got to play in the other games but had major roles. And so they not only got to play, but they played major roles. And then you're combining that experience with the other players coming back. So you've got a good combination there. You mentioned sold-out arena. That's a huge factor, coming home, playing at home. You know, I would say very few events match, you know, a sold out national basketball arena for an international game in Tallaght. So that's a big factor as well going into Sunday.
So there's a lot of positives. As I said, for the casual viewer, perhaps looking at heavy defeat, Ireland, bottom of Group E, five defeats from five. But you mentioned that the change in format, you mentioned the players coming through, the key players that we have now, we're on an upward curve at the moment, a sold out arena. So there is a genuine good feeling around Irish women's basketball at the moment.
Absolutely. The men and women's game, it's only growing. And as I said, we're only at the European level now for 4 years. It's actually less than 4 years that we're back at that level. So it's all about biding time. It'd be the same across football if they were in the same position. It's all about biding time and giving the exposure. And you've got girls now that played, you know, won a silver medal, you know, that are starting to push up. Girls that played Division A basketball, faced Spain a couple of years ago, that are starting to push up and push the standard, not only at the international level, but across the Super League. And as the Super League, our national league here in Ireland grows, our international team will grow as well.
Brilliant. Well, on that positive note, Orla Keeling, thank you so much for popping into the studio. The best of luck to the Irish women's team on Sunday in the sold-out National Basketball Arena against Latvia, hoping to end their Eurobasket qualifiers on positive footing. Alan Colley is still with us. John Kenny's joining us from Tolka Park. Lots to chat about in football. Stay with us here in Game On.
RTE 2FM.
Game On.
Football.
Now, Alan Colley is still with us. We were getting very excited and giddy that the President's Cup is this evening. We'll cross live to John Kenny very shortly. But it is FA Cup weekend, and it was League Cup semi-final mid-week. Liverpool 4, Spurs 0, 4-1 on aggregate. As you mentioned, Al, you've already sacked Ange last week, so we're going to just have to move the conversation on a little bit. And was this a new low for Spurs? And, you know, what happened to Ange Ball? Because there was no shots on target even last night, and they seemed to sit back a lot more. So they did change it up somewhat.
Yeah, as you said, Shane, I've already sacked him last week, so I might sack his assistant this week. But he's really struggling, he really is. And everybody will point to the injuries, but this was going on before the injuries as well, the second half of last season. There were signs of this kind of thing. And the fact that it's got to this level, like you phrased it there, is it a new low? The whole season has just been an absolute shambles. And when you look at them, and I suppose we must kind of, a little bit of context on it. You're going to Anfield. Liverpool, obviously, probably the best team in the world at the moment, playing unbelievable stuff. So it was always going to be a difficult night for Spurs. But I suppose the biggest disappointment from Spurs fans' point of view is how much of a whimper they went out on, Shane. They never put up any fight, no resilience, no kind of courage on the ball or off the ball. And as you said, Ange Ball was kind of, we were being, the preaching that he was doing around this whole Ange Ball was in possession, we'd be really good, we'd create chances and this kind of stuff. We haven't seen any of that because, and if that's not working, you have no chance because out of possession, they're probably, bar Man United at the moment, they're probably one of the worst teams I've ever seen out of possession, Shane, in terms of the lack of respect he pays towards that side of the game and the opposition. Because if you're going to Anfield, the last thing you want to do is be playing balls out from the back and playing into the hands of probably, as I said, one of the best teams in the world, but also the intensity that Liverpool press you. And it just made it so easy for Liverpool. Now, Liverpool were very, very good on the night. But I actually think Liverpool even had another gear in them if they needed to go to that. Shane, it was an easy enough night for them. But from Spurs' point of view, he really is struggling.
Is there a disconnect now between management and players?
Yeah, because I'm at the stage. I know Kulusevski came out 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and gave him a glowing reference in terms of how happy we are and we love the football and this.
But the evidence is on the pitch. You can say all you want.
And of course he's going to say that. And I like Kulusevski, who's been very good for them. And he shows the fight and the courage. Didn't have his great game last night, but all season he's probably been their shining light, barred a couple of young lads. But there has to be a disconnect because there's only so much you can tell the players and what you're trying to implement. But yet, if you're losing every week, Shane, at some point they lose faith in that message that's been put across. Mm-hmm. And I think that message, it's fallen on deaf ears at the moment. Yeah. And people now are beginning, it was all Levy last week, then it's Postecoglou who's been getting it for probably a few weeks, but now people were asking the question last night and even today towards the players. But I do believe the players, as you say, the message is just not registering at the moment because they've lost so much. It's just constant. Mm. If you get into that rut of, it's like people say winning's a habit, losing becomes a habit as well, Shane. And they looked a beaten docket after the first goal last night. It was inevitable what was going to happen.
But morale must be low. And I know you did mention it, Alan, and it's probably important not to gloss over. Currently 10 first-team players out, possibly could rise to 11. Richarlison went down clutching his calf in the first half last night and was subbed off. Like Madison, big miss in the middle of the park. Dominic Solanke, Brennan Johnson on the list of casualties. Like there is a case of he doesn't have a starting 11 almost.
Yeah, that only washes for so long, Shane, right? And we've been hearing that every single week now. But to me, right, if that's me in that situation, and to me, if you have that amount of players missing, at what point does that become an excuse? It's when you keep saying it every week, it becomes an excuse. And it's become an excuse now. He's still at 8 internationals on the pitch last night. It was still a strong team. Like, you look at that midfield three of Bissouma, Pape Sarr, and who's the other one that played? Because he played the strong three last night. And then you have Kulusevski's son and Richarlison. So there's a Swedish international, son, one of the best players in the Premier League. I know he's at the tail end now. And Richarlison, a Brazilian international. I know he had a couple of young lads. But to me, Shane, that's when you have to change and adapt. That if you're going to use the injuries as your excuse card after the match, after a defeat, that's all the more reason to try and be a bit more pragmatic in your approach. You still can't go out and say, well, we're going to play the way we play if I have me 10 injured players. But if I don't have them, I'm just going to jump to, well, we don't have them, so straight away, that's me card out. You can't have it both ways. And he's still trying to play the way he wants his team to play, even without the 10 first-teamers. So to me, that is absolute lunacy. And we've seen this over and over. And whatever about losing to Liverpool, Shane, the criticism I would have had of them last night, it wasn't so much the defeat, it was the manner of the defeat.
Yeah.
Everyone's losing to Liverpool, but they're not losing the way they lost last night, Spurs. The issue I would have is that Leicester City are beating them, Everton are beating them, Crystal Palace are beating them. Everyone is beating Spurs at the moment. And purely because of the approach of the manager and how open they are, Shane, they're the easiest team in the world to play against.
Well, they're away to Villa in the Cup on Sunday. Is it a bit of a saving grace for Ange and Spurs that a lot of the spotlight will be on Marcus Rashford if he features for Villa? So there's already a narrative there for him to perhaps...
Yeah, but the fear I would have, you're going to a very strong team, and I think if he loses at the weekend, he could be gone. Now, people are still saying he'll get to the end of the season because of the cup competitions.
But the injuries, no?
I don't know, Shane. No, you can't keep losing. It's okay. Going on every single week.
Is there a fear that Villa could hop off them?
Yeah. There's a fear anyone could hop off them because of the way they play, Shane. That's the problem. They're so open. And as you said, if we're hearing, well, the flip side of that coin is, but we play great football and we'll create chances and we might score two or three. That's not even happening now.
Mm.
You know, so they're gone away from that. They didn't have a shot on target last night. Sun hit the bar, but they didn't have a shot on target. They never threw a punch at Liverpool. Like, Jamie Carragher was talking about Van Dijk last night as if he could play at a higher level, that it's too easy for him. They made it so easy for him, you know? Whereas you look at Isak the night before and the trouble he caused the Arsenal back four, and particularly yeah. Gabriel and Saliba. And the other thing with Newcastle as well the night before, I know they're at home, but the fight that they brought to Arsenal as well, cup semi-final, we're not even seeing any of that with Spurs, Shane, to be honest with you. I think he's on his last legs. I know I sacked him last week, but I think he's on his last legs. He's really struggling.
Okay.
And I don't want to see any manager sacked, but this can't keep going on.
Yeah. You wouldn't have it at the home farm under 12s, Alan.
I wouldn't have it. I'd be out the door.
This evening, then, Manchester United welcome Ruud van Nistelrooy back to Old Trafford as Leicester City manager. This match is the side's third meeting this term. United won the first two with an aggregate of 8-2. Van Nistelrooy was interim manager for each, and then Amorim made the Dutchman unemployed when taking over as the head coach. Now he returns with a possible role, I suppose, as the villain, to perhaps upset Man United and derail their season somewhat even more.
Yeah, and there's a possibility of that happening as well, because we just don't know what we're getting with this Manchester United team, particularly at home as well. The run of form at home is dreadful. Almost like the fear has seeped in playing in front of the home crowd as well, Shane, that it's become a burden on them now, a major burden, that anybody going to Old Trafford has a chance, even Leicester City. And I know it's the Cup. It'll be interesting. This is kind of the narrative always around the Cup in recent times. What team are they going to play? Mm. So it's hard to make a prediction until we see the teams, because Leicester could be prioritising staying in the Premier League, which they could be, or which they will be. You go through, even I'm looking at Leeds are playing Millwall in the morning. Leeds are obviously looking to try and come up in the Championship. They could leave fellas out. Brighton in no man's land in the league kind of thing. They're quite safe. You'd expect them to go strong, but Chelsea are going for obviously the top four. He might make changes, and he has the squad to make changes. So sometimes it's hard to gauge how these games are going to go until we see the teams. But I definitely think Leicester going to Manchester United will hold no fears whatsoever for them. They went to Spurs a couple of weeks ago, and I already made the comparison that bar Spurs, Man United are the second easiest team to play against at the moment. So Van Nistelrooy will feel as though there's chances there, and they're to be gotten at. So I think they'll have a go. Leicester City, they'll have nothing to lose. Nobody's expecting them to go to Old Trafford to win, so they might as well have a shot at it.
Probably unlikely that we'll see any big upsets. Orient at home to Manchester City, Liverpool on the road to Plymouth, League One leaders Birmingham at home to Newcastle, Everton at home to Bournemouth. Obviously Bournemouth have form in flooring Everton. However, am I being overly romantic to say this could be the last FA Cup tie in Goodison Park, so that might be the extra bit of emotion for Everton?
Yeah, and on top of that, you're right to say that, Shane, on top of that, they're on a great run of form, Everton. So their tails are up going into that match. I think that's to tie it around at the moment. When you look at them, because you have Everton in great form, three wins on the bounce. Bournemouth, the story of the season, bar probably Nottingham Forest, Iriola doing an unbelievable job. And that's one. This is a tricky one now for the likes of Bournemouth, because Bournemouth fans are in dreamland in terms of obviously the position to find themselves in, and
they've got their passports out already.
Yeah. And it's an outside chance of Europe, and they have a very good chance of whatever about Champions League. I know it's five places they're saying now, but they'll definitely get Europa League, you would think, at this stage. But then I'm looking at them, Shane, thinking they can win the Cup. Bournemouth, on their day, they've already proven it. They're capable of beating anybody. You'd love to see them go and have a crack at winning a cup. And to me, that would mean more to the Bournemouth fans than finishing seventh. Even though Europe would be a great story for them. But imagine Bournemouth winning the cup. I'd love to see something like that. You mentioned here that we probably won't see surprises. I'm going to give you a couple that I think might be.
Yes, please do, Alan.
Here we go. So, Birmingham at home to Newcastle. Newcastle, who I think, brilliant team. Eddie Howe got it 10 out of 10 during the week. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Eddie Howe. But I just think
Jason Tindall, sorry, it's not just Eddie Howe. Yeah.
Do you want me to go there with Jason Pinto?
Do you want me to go there? I want to talk about the President's Cup, so we don't have time.
So sorry, I think Birmingham have a great chance in that, but again, like obviously with League One, and I also think Coventry with Frank Lampard at home against Ipswich, they have a good chance. Ipswich will be prioritising, I think they'll make changes in that, so that's a chance for Coventry at home.
Okay, you've had your say on the President's Cup earlier, but we are running out of time somewhat, but John Kenny is at the home of the League of Ireland champions, Shelburne, as they welcome Drogheda in the President's Cup. John Kenny, the atmosphere for building in Drumcondra.
It certainly is, and hopefully you can hear me all right. It was some season in 2024 for both of these sides. Shell, the league winners, who finished strongly, as you know yourself, only too well, Shay, to hold off the chasing pack facing Drogheda United, the FAI Cup winners, who were also saved in the Premier Division after the relegation playoff doubleheader against Bray. Well, all irons really on Shell's this season as Damien Duff looks to go back-to-back in the league. Duff has said that tonight's game, he doesn't consider it to be a friendly. It's a way for his side to kickstart the season. He's probably going to have some new signings on the bench and playing tonight. One, the exciting 22-year-old Mupu Udebeko, the underage international, who will be in action tonight. He's in the starting 11. Drogheda have gone full-time now, and they will expect not to be scrapping near the foot of the table when the season comes to its conclusion. Around 3,000, Shane, expected here, including on Tuukkaron. Michael D. Higgins, and it's named after him.
Excellent stuff. John Kenny, enjoy your evening in Tolka Park, and that 3,000 strong will be including Alan Colley very short. We've ran out of road. Alan, in a word, Shells or Drogheda?
Shells.
Ooh, he's gone head over heart. Alan Colley, thank you very much. You'll be back Monday. Game On is back Monday from 6 o'clock. Massive thank you to Andrew O'Connor and Leon Dunn working on this evening's show. The National Chart Show with Blount & Tracy is up next. We're taking a short ad break and checking in with the news desk. Have a great weekend from all of us here at Game On. RTE 2FM.